Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations. This episode of Groundwire was produced on traditional Mi'kmaq territory in Halifax, Nova Scotia. I'm your producer and host, Matt Willish. In this episode, coverage of the Global Climate March in Vancouver and Winnipeg. A prison abolition rally in Montreal.
Canada cannot deport her, but will not release her.
And voices of Indigenous and people of color delegates from the community media convergence that took place in Ottawa.
Well, for us, it's a preserving and enhancing the language, and it's in some parts a reclamation of the language that may have been deteriorated.
But first, here are the headlines. New information from No One Is Illegal Toronto shows that Toronto police have been repeatedly handing over undocumented citizens' information to the Federal Immigration Enforcement. CKUT spoke with Mac Scott from No One Is Illegal about what is happening in the city.
And so what's happening is people are calling the police, and then the police are reporting them. So someone's calling the police because they're being attacked, because they're a victim or a witness of crime, like the case studies in our report, and then the police are calling them into immigration. We want the city to take Toronto police out of their list of safe services. To do otherwise is entrapment. You're encouraging people to go to the police to report when there's a crime or when they've been attacked, and then you're basically putting them in harm's way right afterwards by reporting them to immigration. What we'd like to see with the Toronto Police Services is we'd like to see them adopt an actual don't ask, don't tell policy.
Kathleen Napier, a journalism student in Halifax, recently spoke with Chris Powell Irving, an inmate at Burnside Correctional Facility for CKDU. Irving, who goes by Casper, is part of a prison poetry program.
Casper's mother told him to write his feelings when he was 16. She's never far from his mind when he writes poetry.
I dedicate that to my mother, who told me to write my feelings on a piece of paper and put it into something special. And this is my job now. I do this for a living sometimes. I got songs out there.
Casper is not lost. He sees a different future for himself and his child.
Every day I look in the mirror, I see Casper. I know it could be me. And I think about it, and I'm like, you know what? One of these days, I'm going to wake up outside of jail for once and not have the mentality of a prisoner. I'm going to have the mentality of a father. And I want to see that day.
In 2012... Enbridge applied to the National Energy Board to reverse the flow of Line 9, a 40-year-old pipeline not designed to carry diluted bitumen. The Chippewas of the Thames First Nations are currently challenging it in the Supreme Court of Canada. Co-op Radio Red Eye host Jane Williams interviewed one of the band councillors.
Line 9 is a 40-year-old pipeline in central Canada. Enbridge wants to reverse the direction of flow in Line 9 so that it can transport oil from Sarnia to Montreal. The flow reversal was approved in 2012 with little discussion. However, community opposition mounted as it became known that the light crude now moving through Line 9 would be replaced by diluted bitumen from Alberta's tar sands and fracked oil from North Dakota. The Chippewa of the Thames First Nation has launched an appeal to the Supreme Court of Canada to have the National Energy Board approval quashed because they were not meaningfully consulted. Myingan Henry is a band counselor with the Chippewa of the Thames First Nations, and he joins me today from Toronto.
There is a nation-to-nation relationship that government is to have with First Nations when it comes to anything that may change or deviate from the health of the land. And this is included in the Canadian Constitution under Section 35. There's a portion called duty to consult, and this has never been initiated by the government. From what we understand, the government has basically given authorization to a third party, which they consider the National Energy Board, or even in some cases the proponent themselves, to do the consultation. And that's where we find the discrepancy. We don't feel that governments can issue their responsibility off to a third party, such as either of those two entities. So that's where we find a legal challenge in terms of what transpired in Line 9 in Southern Ontario.
That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back. Just heard What the World Needs Now by Roxy and the Underground Soul Sound. Now it's time for our feature stories. Moi Contre les Prisons hosted a rally at the Palais de Justice on Tuesday, December 1st. Banners were unfurled on the front steps of the courthouse with messages in support of prisoners and decried the current state of the Canadian prison system, which has been steadily deteriorating in the wake of austerity-driven budget cuts. An array of passionate speeches delivered by the members emphasized the conditions faced by prisoners and detainees alike. CKUT's Elliot Lowell recorded some of the highlights from the rally.
So, solidarité avec les prisonniers. So, solidarité avec les prisonniers. So, solidarité avec les prisonniers.
Alpha Shigbo was born in the Toronto Immigration Holding Center on August 25th, 2013. Alpha has not seen a single day of freedom. Tomorrow, he celebrated his second birthday in detention last summer. His mother, Gloria Anawas, has been imprisoned in immigration jails in Ontario since February 2013 without charge or trial. Canada cannot deport her, but will not release her. Detained migrants, their families and supporters have formed a campaign to end indefinite detention and are making four simple pragmatic demands. First, freedom for the wrongly jailed. Release all migrant detainees who have been held for longer than 90 days. Two, end arbitrary and indefinite detention. If removal cannot happen within 90 days, immigration detainees must be released. Limits on detention periods are recommended by the United Nations and are the law in the United States and the European Union. Third, no maximum security holds. Immigration detainees should not be held in maximum security provincial jails. Must have access to basic services and be close to family members. And the fourth demand, overhaul the adjudication process. Give migrants fair and full access to judicial review, legal aid, bail programs, and pro bono representation.
With budget cuts to the correctional system, it is inmates that lose out the most. We are part of a group of people that are the most marginalized and exploited in a free society. We, provincial inmates, have personally felt the cuts to the budget imposed on incarceration institutions. This is evident to a horrifying degree, where upon becoming inmates, we are no longer equal status citizens, with conditions worsening depending on the circumstance in which we became prisoners. However, we know our conditions are directly linked to the capitalist exploitations of the working class, who on a global level are composed of people of color, immigrants, or refugees. Amongst these groups, women are the most precarious. In these contexts, a prison is just a management system for capitalists to control populations they have classified is useless. At the Tenguay Women's Prison in Montreal, our living conditions are degraded at a breakneck pace. Over the course of the last 5 years, we have been hungry. The size of our rations and the quality of our food are causing malnutrition for people who are unable to afford the canteen to round out their meals. We are sick. The establishment is falling into ruins. The walls are being destroyed by moisture. In certain sectors, the waste comes up from the latrine. There are vermin droppings in the kitchens and the cells. The cleaning products are diluted to a point of losing their cleaning properties, becoming ineffective. They are rationed in a way that it becomes impossible to clean the cells effectively. Our access to medical services is reduced to the minimum. The retraction of access to prescription drugs endangers the lives of numerous inmates under the indifference of agents of the correctional institution. Those who show physical symptoms, even the most sick, are left to the care of other inmates, turning cells into medical wards with no training, no medical supplies, or without proper cleaning products in an already filthy environment. On top of that is the fact that people in these predicaments frequently have transmissible diseases like HIV and hepatitis B. Pregnant women are lacking almost any medical care, except for one checkup during their pregnancy, and not even an adaptive diet. Miscarriages are not considered urgent. Pregnant women receive no prenatal care. We are treated in an inhuman way.
Avec les prisonniers. So, solidarité. Avec les prisonniers. So, solidarité. Avec les prisonniers.
Around the world, more than 2,400 climate march events took place to put pressure on delegates attending the Paris Climate Summit. In Winnipeg, over 300 people showed up on a bright Sunday afternoon at the ruins of the St. Boniface Cathedral to participate in creating a climate of change. The event was organized by a number of local organizations, including the Council of Canadians Winnipeg Chapter, the Manitoba Energy Justice Coalition, and the Canadian Catholic Organization for Development and Peace. The event included a walk across the Provencher Bridge to the Odina Circle, an Indigenous ceremonial site at the historic forks of the Red and Assiniboine Rivers. CKUW's Michael Welch attended the event and now brings us some of the voices present there.
I have someone in custody here right now.
This is Elizabeth Shearer, and I work with the David Suzuki Foundation here in Winnipeg with the Blue Dot Movement. This event today was organized in partnership with many organizations in Winnipeg who want to see strong climate leadership from our federal governments leading up to the Paris Climate Summit, Climate Talks 2015. The global goals for today are calling on our local leaders for keeping 80% of fossil fuels in the ground and leading to 100% renewable green energy by 2050. We're here gathering at the cathedral, the St. Boniface ruins, here 1 p.m. on November 29th, and there's about a couple hundred of us here gathered to listen to a few speakers. We have some elders blessing this through ceremony, connecting different communities together to tackle big ideas and challenges of climate change. And then we're moving on to march our way and rally with our signs and noisemakers to Udena Circle to meet and gather and hear from local environmental organizations, drink some hot chocolate, enjoy each other's company on this sunny winter day, and continue to build this community moving forward.
Dennis LeNevieu, and I'm a retired biophysicist. I used to work at Atomic Energy of Canada. The biggest emitter of greenhouse gas in the provinces is from flaring of fossil fuels, flaring of sour gas in southwest Manitoba, and there's no attempt to regulate that. The fossil fuel industry has to start ramping down, and there's so much entrenched interest and investment in that industry, it's very resistant to change.
This afternoon, we could be at a tailgate party, getting ready for tonight's game. But we are here to make a statement. We want to do our part to save Mother Earth.
Allah says in the Quran, which of the favors of your Lord shall ye deny? And every day by our actions and the actions of the corporations and the money makers, we destroy that favor. We deny that favor. We disrespect that favor.
Quick message for the media. We the people, going free the people. Climate change is with community and with the people lies possibility as well as responsibility. So let's vibe up, come together, make it more better, man.
Are we ready?
Yes.
Let's climate burn!
We need to find more sustainable ways to develop energy sources and stop, reduce our dependence on the oil and fossil fuels.
My concern is consumerism. So I think the leaders need to take a ton of responsibility, but we also need to change our ways in terms of what we're consuming and where we're getting it from.
My name is Brenda Chaput-Saltel, and I am the Youth Programs Officer for Development and Peace. Because our organization's focus is a preferential option for the poor, climate change has a big part to play.
My name is Robert Falconillette, Member of Parliament for Winnipeg Centre.
And I'm Dave Nickars, aspiring MLA for Wolseley.
I'm not convinced the Energy East, as it's set out, can meet the environmental standards. And so I think there's better ways of going forward to meet the energy needs of our country and to provide really good paying jobs. Instead of just, you know, developing another hydro dam, which we lose another river, which is unfortunate, we have all this wind that comes right across the prairies. It's fantastic.
First of all, we're not just asking for an adjustment of the dials. We're asking for fundamental change. As far as specific issues go in Manitoba, there is no way we can let the Energy East pipeline go through this province. And here's why. It represents a 40% increase in tar sands expansion, and we have to work to get tar sands down to zero. And this is the time to make the most noise about the Energy East pipeline. What happened in the United States with Keystone XL is that the entire a lot of the population stood up and said no to it and forced the hand of the government. It doesn't really matter which government's in power. We have to force their hand. We have to ask for a lot more than the Liberal government is willing to give. I'm going to be prepared to keep fighting, and everybody should be doing the same thing.
Thousands of people participated in Vancouver's Global Climate March on Coast Salish territories. Jane Williams of Vancouver Co-op Radio's Red Eye Collective spoke with one of the organizers from Greenpeace.
A thing that I find encouraging is the way that the idea of keeping resources in the ground, which was, I don't know if it originally came from 350.org, my sense is that it did, but it's become part of the common parlance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that idea was very quickly picked up. I remember The Guardian had started a campaign, and seeing a news organization run a climate campaign was unprecedented. I haven't ever seen a news organization, because so many news organizations need to be seen as being unbiased. The Guardian is such a trustworthy source, and then they began this campaign called Keep It in the Ground. 350 picked it up. Quite a few other organizations have been using that language. And it's been amazing to see, and also all of these different fights that are keeping it in the ground. The Keystone XL was recently stopped, which is amazing. Same thing with Enbridge Northern Gateway won't be built. So it looks like that campaign of keeping it in the ground kind of adds a layer of international legitimacy to all of the different pipeline fights and coal fights that activists are fighting around the world.
After Paris, what's next for the movement to stop and reverse the damage?
After Paris, there's actually been already a call from all of the different transnational environmental organizations that will be calling for mass civil disobedience and direct action in the spring, and just kind of an escalation of tactics. A lot of people all over the world are wanting to keep this momentum from all of these climate marches and kind of really step up the pressure and say that no matter what happens in Paris, we're going to keep continuing to build this movement and we're going to keep building this community. So
now it's time for our community radio report. This past month, Carleton University and the Canadian Association of Community Television Users and Stations hosted the first ever Community Media Convergence as a space for both learning and sharing. For this episode's community radio report, Groundwire's own Ome Salma Ramatula brings us voices of Indigenous and people of color delegates at the conference.
The Community Media Convergence was hosted in Ottawa from November 22nd to the 24th and was the first national professional and policy development conference in Canada for community media practitioners from four sectors: community radio, community television, community online platforms, and video games with a social and local focus. As a delegate at the Convergence, I took part in a wide variety of workshops and panels and was especially excited to learn about other mediums. I was also interested in meeting and sharing with other delegates from around the country, especially other people of color and Indigenous peoples, to find out why they were attending the Convergence and what challenges and successes they were having in their own communities. John Gagnon is the CEO of Wawate Native Communication Society that serves the communication needs of First Nations people and communities of the Anishinaabe-Aski Nation, and John spoke to the importance of Indigenous language programming.
Well, for us, it's preserving and enhancing the language, and in some parts a reclamation of the language that may have been deteriorated or lost. You know, unfortunately, old policies of the past, tried to eradicate the culture, and with that came the language through... eradications came through residential schools and a lot of assimilation policies. So we're playing like catch-up with our Canadian brothers and sisters who have emigrated here and were able to keep their language and culture. So for us, there's a lot of catch-up to play, right? Our programming is on radio. It's based around news, entertainment, music, religion. We also do like live jamborees on weekends that certain communities can purchase our airtime, and they celebrate their community spirituality through song and prayer and dance, and it's quite exciting. It's in the language, so it's a little different. Sometimes you get some English in there as well, but on the most part, it's in the language.
Haley Hayen-Wren is a communications student at Carleton University, where the Convergence was hosted, and she told me about why she thought it was important for her to take part.
This conference is very important to me because, like, I'm from China, and as a student in China, I didn't have lots of, like, access to, like, community media, and there's not, like, a mature system or, like, regulations as Canada do. I know it's just interesting to see, like, how much, you know, community media in Canada has achieved. Like, you guys, you have, like, TV station, you have radio, and you found a lot of money. Once I go back to China, I want to, like, you know, tell my friends on my social media, like, you know, like, community media could also be a format among students in China, among our communities, you know, like, to express our own voice.
Jesse George is the host of Word on the Street on the Scope Ryerson Radio, a new show focusing on the intersections of youth and politics in Toronto. CJRU, the Scope, is Ryerson University's new campus and community multimedia hub and one of the newest community radio licenses that plans to go on air on the 1280 AM dial in Toronto early next year.
I'm here to find out about radio and I guess learn about campus radio, not only in this city but in this country. Also to build a local radio network, you know, coming from my radio station, it's still relatively new. So we're looking to kind of increase our show awareness and just, you know, learn more kind of creative patterns of, you know, broadcasting, so that way our shows actually maintain some, like, longevity. There's something kind of like nostalgic about radio that's, like, really cool, and that's what fuels my interest in it. So yeah, shout out to the Scope at Ryerson, you know, my team and my radio station out there, because we're gonna be doing big things, so watch out.
While the first 2 days of the Convergence offer delegates professional development skills and sharing workshop, the third day was reserved as a policy development forum in which delegates had the opportunity to refine a policy proposal to be presented to the CRTC, the Ministry of Canadian Heritage, and Industry Canada, all of whose policies impact community media in our country. Hopefully, the findings of the policy forum will build the basis for a reinvigorated discussion about the significance of community-produced media in Canada and be a critical intervention in CRTC's community TV policy review currently taking place. Reporting from unceded Algonquin territory in Ottawa, this is Ome Salmarahemtula reporting for Groundwire.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced on traditional Mi'kmaq territory in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Music this week was by Roxy and the Underground Soul Sound. Headlines this week were written by Carly Forbes, Matt Willish, and Jane Williams. We'd also like to thank Kathleen Napier, Red Eye Co-op Radio, Elliot Lobel, Ome Salma Ramantula, Michael Welch, CKUT's Off the Hour, Aaron Lackoff, and M Tree. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station. Listen to it on Rabble or download it at groundwire.ncra.ca. Groundwire is a project of the members of the National Campus and Community Radio Association. Thanks for listening. I've been your host, Matt Willish.